The Eight Immortals Travel East, Chapter 47.
We've got a really wild one for you today.
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely a lot to process.
Yeah. So our source material on the table is from Chapter 47 of Journey to the East.
Right. The section specifically titled Dongbin Twice Defeats the Prince.
And our mission is to unpack this this incredibly rapid, violent escalation between a group of powerful immortals and an entire underwater kingdom.
We're basically looking at how a really simple property dispute just completely spirals into an all-out magical war.
Exactly. So to set the scene for you, I want you to imagine you have a neighbor, right?
Uh-huh.
And this neighbor shines a blindingly bright light directly into your house. So you go over, you confiscate the light, and you lock them in your basement.
Which is, you know, a totally rational response.
Right. Completely normal. But honestly, that is exactly how this story kicks off. Okay, let's unpack this. Because it starts so small and gets so big so fast.
What's fascinating here is that we usually think of mortals in these stories as being serene, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Enlightened, peaceful, detached from mortal squabbles.
Exactly. But the text portrays them entirely differently. They are fiercely proud.
Highly emotional.
Very emotional. They're incredibly reactive. And they are completely capable of wielding this devastating, disproportionate force the second they feel disrespected.
Yeah, and we see that immediately. So let's dive into the emotional aftermath of a kidnapping.
Right.
The immortals are overjoyed because they just reunited with their friends Kaihi and Dongbin. But Kaihi is just completely broken down. Like, he is physically weeping.
An immortal, literally shedding tears.
Yes. And he explains to the group why he was captured in the first place. So he has these jade clappers, the Yubin, and they were emitting this brilliant glowing light that shone directly down into the Dragon King's palace under the sea.
Which is just super annoying if you're the Dragon King.
Seriously. So Prince Moji of the Dragon Palace takes major offense to this. He forcefully steals the glowing jade and locks Kaihi in a pitch black room.
Which, again, escalates things immediately.
Right. And Kaihi only gets out because his buddy, Dongbin, decides the best rescue tactic is to literally boil the sea.
Which is just insane. He boils the ocean.
He boils the ocean. And that wakes up the terrified Dragon King, who immediately releases Kaihi.
But, and this is the crucial part, the Dragon King keeps the jade clappers.
Yes. He keeps the Yubin. And Kaihi feels so deeply humiliated by this. He's standing there crying to his friends, lamenting that, you know, he thought becoming an immortal meant he was supposed to be free.
At ease with the universe.
Right. And instead, he's subjected to this massive disgrace. So he straight up begs his immortal friends for revenge.
And they are just furious. The immortal group completely loses it.
Oh, yeah. Iron Crutch Lee, or Tigwai, he completely dismisses the underwater forces. He calls them, quote, little water demons.
Such disrespect.
And his proposed solution is extreme. He offers to use his magical gourd to just completely dry up the sea, just evaporate the whole thing to get the jade back.
Little environmental destruction.
Yeah. But then Elder Zongwo, or Guelao, he chimes in and advocates for what sounds like a slightly more measured approach.
Right. He suggests Dongbin try asking for the jade one more time.
Just ask nicely.
Yeah, ask nicely. And if they refuse, well, then they can boil the sea.
Okay, I have to stop right here because this escalation is just absurd. Think about this. It's like someone down the street stealing your lawnmower, right?
Okay.
And your friend says, hey, don't worry, I'll just vaporize the entire neighborhood so we can pick your lawnmower out of the crater.
That's exactly what's happening.
It's wild.
Yeah.
So I have to ask you, is Elder Zongwo actually being diplomatic here? Or is he just offering a terrifying ultimatum?
Well, it connects to a much broader theme here, which is the immense entitlement of these immortals.
Right.
Elder Zongwo is absolutely not seeking peace. He's just establishing a pretext so they look like the good guys.
Oh, like checking a box.
Exactly. He's checking a diplomatic box.
Mm-hmm.
Because the threat of total environmental destruction, like drying up the entire sea, is just casually kept on the table as a backup plan.
Just casually in their back pocket.
Right. They aren't negotiating. They're demanding total submission.
And that diplomatic suggestion brings us right to the shore, where things just completely fall apart.
Almost instantly.
Yeah. So the narrative shifts. Dongbin and the immortal maiden, Xiangu, they arrive at the sea to, you know, ask for the stolen jade.
If you can even call it asking.
Right. They stand there and loudly demand the artifact. And a yaksha patrolling the area hears them yelling and goes straight to report this to the prince.
And the prince is outraged. And honestly, you can kind of see his point.
Oh, totally.
He's sitting there complaining like these are the same immortals who just boiled our sea.
Right. Literally cooked his neighbors.
Yeah. and he thinks his father, the Dragon King, was foolish to even let them go in the first place. And now they have the audacity to come back and yell at his front door.
Yeah.
So the prince decides to mobilize. He grabs a force of 10 shrimp soldiers and crab generals, and he marches right onto the shore to capture Dongbin.
But it doesn't go well for him.
No, not at all. During the clash, the prince is just quickly completely outmatched. He realizes he's in trouble and turns to flee back toward the sea.
Because that's his domain. Yeah. He needs the water to escape.
Right. But here's where it gets really interesting.
Hmm.
As he's running, Xiangyu deploys this bizarre but incredibly deadly magical artifact. It's a bamboo cover, or like a basket, called a zuzao.
Yeah, the zuzao.
She throws it, and it traps the prince in the water. It totally prevents his escape.
He's pinned down in his own element.
Exactly. And as the trapped prince is fighting back, struggling in this basket, Dongbin just shouts, hurls his sword high into the sky, and it comes down and strikes the prince dead.
Right in the forehead.
Right in the forehead. And it's not just the prince. The fleeing shrimp and crab soldiers are also caught by Xiangyu's bamboo cover.
And countless of them are just decapitated.
It's a total massacre. But I want to pose a direct question here for you and for you listening at home.
Okay.
If they were just there to politely ask for the jade back, why in the world did Xiangyu bring a magical trapping basket?
Right. That is the big red flag.
I mean, doesn't this basically prove they arrived looking for blood? They knew exactly what they were doing.
Oh, absolutely. This really unpacks the tactical nature of the immortals. They aren't just powerful, they are calculating.
Yeah, very calculating.
If you look at it from the prince's perspective, he is defending his sovereign territory. These are aggressive invaders who previously inflicted mass terror on his home by boiling the water.
Right. He's basically defending his country.
Exactly. And the fact that Xiangyu brought the bamboo cover, it represents this inescapable doom. It wasn't a defensive tool.
No.
It was designed to turn a retreat into a slaughter. They came prepared to make sure nobody got away.
Wow. Yeah, they were out for revenge from the very start. And obviously, the tragic death of the prince necessitates a massive response from the underwater kingdom.
Of course.
Mm.
You can't just murder royalty and walk away.
Right. So the episode's focus subtly shifts. We move from this localized skirmish on the beach to a large-scale, overwhelming, magical battlefield.
The scale of the conflict just explodes here.
It does. The Dragon King gets the news of his son's death, and he is horrified. He immediately dispatches his second prince to beat the war drums and lead a full army against Dongbin and Xiangyu.
So now it's an actual war.
Exactly. The second prince signals his troops with his spear, and the sea forces just completely encircle the two immortals.
They're totally surrounded.
Right, trapped in the center. They can't break through the lines. And we see this rare moment where Dongbin actually panics.
He's physically cornered by a conventional army.
Yeah. So in his panic, he throws his flying sword straight up into the air.
And this is where the magic system just completely breaks the rules.
Yes. That single sword magically multiplies. It turns into millions of blades just raining down from above on the sea forces.
Millions. It's just an unimaginable scale. And the result is absolute carnage. Like, the text does not hold back. It specifically notes the horrific bloodshed. It talks about blood dripping everywhere, countless dead soldiers floating in the water.
The army is just decimated in seconds.
Yeah. And breaking out of that bloody encirclement, Dongbin meets the second prince in combat. And with just a single swing of his sword, Dongbin completely severs the second prince's left arm.
Just brutal.
So the wounded prince and whatever is left of his forces just turn and flee for their lives back into the sea.
Which is just a horrific defeat.
So what does this all mean? I mean, think about the sheer scale of the violence here. For you listening, it's the magical equivalent of like being surrounded by infantry. So you call in a targeted airstrike of a million missiles.
Right. It's not even a fight. It's an execution.
Yeah.
And this raises an important question about the nature of the warfare we're seeing. We're looking at extreme asymmetrical warfare.
What do you mean by that?
Well, look at the terrifying power gap.
Mm.
The sea forces are relying on traditional military tactics.
Right. Yeah. Encirclements, spears, shields, formations.
Exactly. But the immortals possess these apocalyptic, reality-bending weapons.
Right. Multiplying swords.
Yeah. When one side can literally rain a million blades from the sky, physical numbers become entirely irrelevant. The Dragon King's army never stood a chance.
They were just marching to their deaths.
Completely.
And the narrative really drives home the devastating emotional toll of all this. Like, we go down to the Underwater Kingdom for the aftermath.
It's pretty heartbreaking.
It really is. The Dragon King is down there anxiously waiting for news of the battle. And he just watches as his second prince stumbles back into the palace, missing an arm, bleeding out.
Just a horrific sight for a parent.
Yeah. And the text says the second prince lets out a single massive cry, just this sound of pure agony, and then he dies right there on the spot.
He loses two sons in essentially a single afternoon.
Right. And the Dragon King's reaction is just visceral. He collapses to the ground in a dead faint.
His whole world just ends.
Yeah, he's totally broken. His attendants have to rush over and revive him. And when he finally wakes up, he speaks through gritted teeth.
He is furious.
Beyond furious. He declares that it would be a total waste of his royal title if he does not avenge the murder of his two sons.
He's going all in now.
Oh, absolutely. He personally puts on his own armor. He mobilizes 100,000 elite underwater troops, and he vows to completely wipe out the Immortal Party. Total war.